welcome to the official podcast of the Irish Association of Speech and Language Therapists, the IASLT in Conversation. Today we are talking to two recently retired speech and language therapy managers from the real capital, Cork. Anne Horgan started her speech and language therapy journey in Trinity College Dublin in 1979, and on graduation went back to her native Cork to work with the Southern Health Board in community care in Southleigh with an outreach service to West Cork. In the mid-1980s, she moved to Northleigh in the city as a senior speech and language therapist, later principal speech and language therapist. And in 2011, she became the speech and language therapy manager for Cork North Primary Care SLT service. She retired last year. Anne Tagney graduated from Trinity in 1987. At that time, the country was in deep recession, and only one from her class of 20 in Trinity got a job in the Republic of Ireland, the rest having to go to the UK. Anne was in Belfast until 1989, and then she got a three-month temporary post in Cork, Southern Health Board, and didn't stray far from her native Cork until she retired last November in 2024. So welcome to Anne and Anne. Thank you very much for joining us today. So we're just going to take you back maybe to the beginning to think about what inspired each of you to pursue a career in speech and language therapy.
Well, I had a relative who attended speech therapy, as it was called then, and he had a severe speech sound disorder, and I was fascinated at the improvement that he made, and I thought this was a wonderful thing to do. I also went to speech and drama classes, and my teacher at the time volunteered one day per week at a clinic for children with cerebral palsy in Ballantemple in Cork. So she encouraged me to get a professional qualification in speech therapy, as there weren't qualified people working in Cork at the time. So I applied to Trinity and I was thrilled when I got in.
Great. And Anne Tagney?
Well, I fell into it by accident or by chance or luck. I had planned to go to the Cork School of Art when I did the Leaving Cert because I was quite young. I was just 17 during the Leaving Cert. But I filled out CAO form anyway, out of form as we did. And I put down Remedial Linguistics in Trinity thinking, well, all I knew really was that it had something to do with working with lisps and stammers. And then I got called for interview and then I got offered the place and then decision time came and I decided to take up my place on that course and studied speech therapy and haven't regretted it since.
Okay, that's great. And so you were both at very different times coming out in Ireland. So Anne Horgan, can you tell us first, what was the profession like in Ireland when you first started?
Well, there were very few people practicing as speech and language therapists. Very few people even knew what speech and language therapy was then. Many confused with speech and drama and didn't realise that it included, you know, language, total communication, not just speech. And I think part of the problem was the title of the profession because it was called speech therapy and that didn't actually change till the 1990s to become speech and language therapy. But when I qualified, there was 7 people working in Cork and Kerry, and that was the total primary care service and the hospital service. But actually, even if we go back a step, it really impacted on my student training because there weren't placements available. So I actually had a wonderful time. I had the opportunity to go to Ithaca, which is a speech and hearing camp in upstate New York, attached to Cornell University, and it was fantastic. We slept in log cabins. I had 4 children in a junior language group during the day, and they also had what they called support sessions, which were gross and fine motor. And at night then we sat around campfires, we toasted marshmallows. It was idyllic, and yet we got a huge understanding of what it was like to live with the child who had maybe special needs or additional needs, because we were in the cabins with the camp attendees. I also went to a camp in Carn in Wexford, which was actually modelled, I suppose, a little bit on the Ithaca camp. So that was funded by the Southeastern Health Board at the time, and there were 8 of us went down for a fortnight, and that again was residential. I also went to London. I had an adult placement, and I stayed in a nurse's home in Hither Green. So it was actually, for, I suppose, a very new profession. We had an amazing opportunity to go to other countries and to see, you know, how they ran their service, which gave us ideas for, you know, the future. I think Anne had some different experiences.
Yeah, there was more therapists in the country when I qualified. There was, my memories, there was, I think, 110 of us in the country, and we would all have known each other or known of each other at least. But like Anne now, the profession really wasn't known, and every time I met somebody who asked me what I did for a living, I had to explain what speech therapy was. And if I said I did remedial linguistics in Trinity, they thought, they'd say, oh, you must speak lots of different languages then. So there wasn't much understanding or knowledge, really. And I suppose we were as rare as 10's teeth, really. That was the expression about speech and language therapists back in the day. And I didn't know any other therapist. There was nobody from my school or from my town that had done speech therapy. So it was all very, very new at that time.
Yeah, yeah. And I suppose looking back now over your 30 plus years of your careers, what were some of the most rewarding moments?
Yes, I suppose I was reflecting on this last week, and I thought about this mother actually who attended a parent group for children who were stammering, and she came back to the clinic one day especially to talk to me and to thank me for the positive impact it had had in her life. Now, she'd been really reluctant to attend the parent group, and I suppose I really encouraged her and I valued her contributions and brainstorms and whatever, and she told me that it really increased her self-confidence and that she actually applied for a community employment scheme, and she was after getting a job, and she said she would never have done that if she hadn't come to therapy with her son and come to the group. And I thought that was just brilliant, you know, something that was in a way, you know, unexpected, but it had a huge impact in her life. I suppose the other thing I really loved was, you know, when new therapists came and they grew and they developed and then they left, which was very sad sometimes. But it was great to think, you know, that they'd gained skills with us, and some of them went off to be senior therapists, some went off to be managers, some people went off to do other degrees and to work in universities in different areas. So the other thing I think I realised, it was only last year when I was retiring, the amount of people who came up and said that I'd had a positive impact on their life through work-life balance. And I suppose as a manager, I always tried to, you know, facilitate the parent leave and different things. And I suppose, you know, it's a whole, that holistic approach, I think, that speech and language therapy managers can have, you know, when they're looking at their team. And then there were different projects that I was involved with. There was the Happy Talk project, which many of your listeners will be familiar with. And that started in Cork 14 years ago, and I was there at the very start of that project. The other was the Young Knocknaheeny Let's Grow Together project. I was involved in that again from 2012. As you know, that it focuses a lot on infant mental health and first relationships for parents and caregivers. And there were lots of really interesting things.
Great, thank you. And Anne?
In my career, one heart that really defined it, I guess, was my work with SLI, later known as DLD. So I did a lot of work on that in Cork at the beginning, and instrumental setting up the first language class in Cork in 1995. I would have been very involved with development procedures and protocols around that and working with the school principals and the inspectorate. I set up the SLI SIG, and I chaired that for many years. We made a lot of progress in that SIG over the years, and I inputted into the ISLD documents, the position papers on SLI DLD. So I did a lot of work around that, and it was very enjoyable as well, of course, as working in the language class for years, which was great experience and great working. I suppose the mother language class was a great privilege to work with those small children in their natural day, and to work closely with the teachers. So I really, really enjoyed all my time in the language class. I did a lot of work as well in the early days, in the early 90s, with laryngectomies. We started surgical voice restoration in the South Infirmary Hospital, so I was involved in that, the beginning of that, which was very exciting as well. Other bits to my career, I suppose, I'd be very proud of how our team worked in terms of our governance and our clinical supervision, and professional supervision was very well built into our team, and we would all have worked on our Belbin team roles and our type indicators to get the best mix of working groups and, you know, get the best people's styles being appreciated as team members. I was, you know, very happy with how that worked out as well in our department. So lots of things as well. I also was the chair of the National SLT Managers Group for a while, and that managers group is a very valuable forum for managers in the country. Brilliant networking opportunity and support for us all. And I was the chair over COVID, so we had to transfer from face-to-face meetings to online meetings. So I was terrified that the group would fall apart on my watch, but luckily it didn't. It kept going.
And you did a great job.
We did a good job, yeah. It kept going, which was great. So those are a few of the things, the highlights, I suppose, when I look back over my working life.
Okay, great. That sounds... And you've also both faced challenges, I'm sure. So can you think maybe about some of the biggest challenges you faced as speech and language therapists and as managers of the profession?
I suppose lack of resources. In the 80s, when I started work in St. Finbar's, there was a major recession, and so there was no money for new therapeutic assessments or for equipment. And I suppose right through my career, there's often seems to have been a mismatch between available funds and equipment. So in the early days, again, there weren't the therapists available to fill the posts. So the Southern Health Board at the time often offered sponsorship to people to encourage people to come back to Cork and to Kerry as well. There was sponsorship for Kerry too. But then other times the posts were, there were therapists available, but there was nobody to employ them. You know, so it was really, I suppose, difficult. But with the establishment of what we would refer to as the new courses in UCC and UCG and Limerick, although I know they're 20 years old now, there were more therapists available to employ. But then with the financial crash or whatever. So I suppose in recent years then, it's been more the delay in filling vacant posts. Sometimes it can be up to 6 months before a post is filled. So that's really very challenging for staff and for the public as well.
In addition to that, then there's been a lot of changes in the structures within the health service over the last few years, more so than any other time, I think, really. And in our working time, there's been more iterations of the health service than we've ever seen before. And that, for us, I guess, as managers, was always challenging when things changed and it was harder to get decisions, harder to get approval. We were getting a bit more distant, I think, really, from the people who were making decisions and held the power. So all those different restructuring causes challenge to us in our role as managers within the health service.
And I suppose what changes in the profession have surprised you the most, do you think?
I suppose the fact that it's still very female dominated. When I was in Ithaca, that was over 40 years ago, the camp leader was male, the assistant leader was male, and I'm not saying now that always the leadership structure should be male, but I suppose we still have very few male SLTs in Ireland, and I think, you know, there are very few coming to the universities as well. So I suppose I wonder why that is, when in so many other careers actually it's been the opposite. You know, that people have careers that were you know, female dominated have a lot more males now, and vice versa. The other thing I suppose that's been surprising is the increased awareness amongst the general public about how the SLT profession, you know, what it can do. And that's actually really positive, even though, it, you know, parents, teachers, caregivers, they have a really wide understanding of the brief of SLT, and they can put a lot of pressure on the manager and the therapist for service. But it's actually brilliant, you know, that people understand the wide breadth that the SLT can help with now.
Yeah, yeah. And have you any thoughts on that, about changes, Anne?
Well, I suppose one thing just worth commenting on is something that impressed us very much was during COVID, how SLTs as a profession really stepped up very quickly and made a great response. We were the first people out in the swabbing centres, and for, you know, very fast to convert to teletherapy. So even with the swabbing centres, for example, I would have got feedback from the people who are managing the swabbing centres, and they would have said to me, and that the therapists, the speech and language therapists, are absolutely fantastic. They're so organised, they're so patient focused, they're a wonderful, wonderful group. And I said, I know that. I've always known it. And even, for example, one of the therapists now saw some kids coming in for swabbing and they were very upset. They might have been young children or children with additional needs. So they took it upon themselves to make social stories and send out photographic information in advance, stuff that we know but made a huge difference to these people at that time. So I was very impressed by what the therapist can do. And I've seen a lot of changes too in terms of embracing neurodiversity really, really quickly. The SLTs are on board with that. And I've seen great progress in the field of dementia. They've done great work with grabbing dementia, doing carers training and modifying the environment and groups for people with dementia. So I think they're able to respond really quickly to new challenges and that, which is what we're good at. Yeah. But it's lovely to actually see it.
Yeah, great. And how would you like to see the profession develop now that you've left over the next 10 to 20 years? What would you like to see?
Well, I suppose I certainly think SLTs can embrace digital health. Like Anne said, there was a lot during COVID, but I think there's a lot more that can happen. And we know there are new apps being developed all the time. But I suppose I would just caution a little bit about it, that I really feel face-to-face intervention will always be very, very important in our profession. You know, we get all those non-verbal cues, and so I think definitely embracing it more, but we need both, really. Yeah. I also think we need a much better career structure for speech and language therapists. And more along the clinical route as well, you know, that it's not, you know, because not everybody wants to go into management. A lot of people would like to stay in the clinical sphere. So clinical specialists, you know, advanced practitioners, and there is a grade of director in some disciplines, and that should be there in speech and language as well. I also think we could have a lot more research. You know, we're obviously a growing population. We're almost back to our pre-famine figures now. And we have yet not a lot of research based on the Irish population in terms of communication. And so I really think that would be a great area to develop more. And I suppose I think what's really important is that robust clinical governance of SLTs by SLTs, regardless to what management structures evolve in the future, because that is crucial to the profession developing as it should.
Yeah, definitely. And the governance is very important to keep an eye on that, because, you know, it's, you know, the experience that speech and language therapists report into people who are not speech and language therapists, which would never have happened back in the day. But that's tending to be what it's looking like now. And I just think there are inherent risks in this. So the profession really needs to be minded, and the clinical governance and safety needs to be minded in whatever structures come up in the future.
Yeah.
I'd like to see SLTs in schools. I know it's been talked about for a long time and it is on the agenda, but I'd love to see SLTs in schools being, again, part of a robust governance structure and linking very carefully with primary care therapists, and to see actual real shared care arrangements going on between a school therapist and a primary care therapist. I think that would be a brilliant thing to see. Mm-hmm. And also, I'd love to see some advanced planning going on. Like, for example, we know the population is aging. We know there's going to be a lot more people who will require speech and language therapy, but I don't know if that planning is going ahead sufficiently to meet that need, which we know is going to be there. And I'd have a concern that, you know, for the state to open up long-term care beds, that they think that's it, a bed isn't enough. You need to have a team of healthcare professionals around a person in that bed. So I would love to see forward planning there. And I'd love to see some bit of planning for the fact that it is still a female-dominated profession, but we know there's going to be maternity leaves and parent leave. There was some amount of factoring in for backfill for that, those vacancies, statutory leave. I think that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, and just to finish, you have both, this is the IASLT's podcast, and you have both been members, lifelong members of the IASLT. And maybe can you just tell us briefly what benefits you see about being a member of the ISLT, you know, that you've had over the last 30 plus years?
Well, I think particularly when I started work, I suppose the ISLT was our go-to for everything. You know, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have, you know, lots of access to journals online or whatever. So it was a fantastic association, and still is. But I think it was great for when people were encountering problems, developing services. It was a great group together to share ideas with. And at that time, again, obviously it was pre-online, so people travelled to Dublin, and with great enthusiasm, you know, did that. And I think it was fantastic in terms of CPD as well, and bringing up new things. I remember, for example, the title of our profession. That was something that went back and forth quite a bit with the association at the time, and the UK changed to speech and language, and we did very shortly afterwards. And I think that was actually a really, really, you know, good thing. But there were lots and lots of other things that ISLT did in the past. And I suppose currently there are lots of things they can do too. And I think, Anne, you found great.
Yeah, I did. Even recently, I found it useful to do what ISLT calls horizon scanning, seeing what the issues are that are going on for people on the ground and bringing them back up to ISLT. And you know, for ISLT to make a position paper or a statement backing up what is evidenced by the people on the ground, and seeing that happening, which is very good. So I do feel they are our association, and what I love to see is that all speech and language therapists will join ISLT, and that'll be a given. That's what you do. And I think it might be nice too if there was regional branches as well, rather than it being quite Dublin-centric. It would obviously regional branches to it. So those are my thoughts for the day around it. But it has certainly changed and developed an awful lot since the beginning of ISLT, which was a PO box in Cork.
Okay, so some things need to come back to Cork anyway, for sure.
And I think as well, going on your idea, Anne, there of a local one, I think that will make it easier for people to join, as you know, different groups or subgroups, and you know, to get involved, because it is our association.
Yeah.
So it would be great for people to volunteer and to join up for different areas.
Yeah. Great, the opportunity to get involved. Okay, well, thank you both very much for taking the time to talk to us today. I know you're both very busy in your retirement, so congratulations again on your wonderful careers and all the best for the future. You can listen back to our other podcasts, including some recent podcast interviews of our ISLT members who have retired, and by following our social media channels on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, or by searching the IASLT in Conversation on Spotify.